Good morning, Your Honors. Catherine Smith for the appellant, Ken Triger, and I'm certainly hoping the third time's the charm on this one. We are back before this court after a trip to the Supreme Court and down to the trial court again, and the issue now, as it always has been in this case, is whether Triger or the Bank of America had a lien priority interest in the proceeds of the Maplewood property.
2 minutes enough.
I'd like 4 minutes, but hopefully I won't use it all. This issue was decided in the first appeal, and both this court with regard to the half proceeds and the Supreme Court with regard to both the half proceeds and the judgments that it found also had the status of judgments and therefore had priority, were entitled to be paid before the Bank of America was on its writ of attachment against only Ms. Owens' interest in the proceeds of this property. And the Bank of America's argument doesn't get any better on this, and it isn't any less timely because they're now calling it by a Latin name, in rem, rather than by its middle French name, lien. This issue was decided before. If they wanted to make this argument based on this in rem analysis, they should have done so in the previous appeal. And in fact, this court, in its opinion, anticipated that this argument could have been made in paragraph 20 of your opinion, which is at 153 WASHAP 115. You point out that the supplemental decree gave Triger a judgment lien that had priority, and that was in part in consequence of the fact that the bank had only gotten a prejudgment writ of attachment against Owens' interest. Now, the basis for their argument that they were also entitled to a writ of attachment against Triger's interest was this in rem claim. They lost on that. They made that argument in the trial court. They lost on it. They did not cross appeal. They did not raise this as an alternative grounds for relief in either this court or the Supreme Court. If they had thought that was a reason for them to prevail, they could have raised it in their petition for review, and I could have complained about that in the Supreme Court, that they hadn't raised it before you. But what they couldn't do is what they did, and that is to go to this court and defend their priority, to go to the Supreme Court and defend their priority, to never raise this issue substantively on appeal, even though we had prophylactically discussed the character of the property, anticipating that they would, and then to go back to the trial court, having never raised this as either a cross appeal or as an alternative grounds for affirmance, and to get exactly the same relief because they called this theory, which is essentially the same theory, by a different name. So we asked the court to affirm. Excuse me. We asked the court to reverse the trial court, based both on the analysis of this court, based on the Supreme Court's analysis, and based on the fact that substantively they are simply wrong. Saying that there's an in rem right under these circumstances essentially has the effect of creating lien priority and making a secured debt out of what was always an unsecured debt. So unless the court has any questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time.
May it please the court, Your Honor. Tom Lindy on behalf of Bank of America. This is not about lien priority. That was decided already. That was decided by the state Supreme Court. This is about an in rem claim that was not decided by the trial court after the initial lien priority claim. In fact, it was expressly preserved by the trial court in the event of appeal on the lien priority claim. Lien priority claim, initial ruling of the trial court, rendered moot the second cause of action that was in this case, which was the in rem claim that the creditor brought against any separate property of Ms. Owens that was awarded to Mr. Triger. See, that's the issue fundamentally here, Your Honors, is that a dissolution of a marriage is like the dissolution of a partnership. And if a partnership is dissolved, We have very specific statutes about winding up the affairs of the partnership, and the assets of the partnership need to be sold and the creditors paid before equity interests are receive anything. Marriage is a little different, though the principle is the same. It's embedded in the law. The spouses are the equity holders, and they actually come in last when you look at priorities and how property should be distributed when it is subject to a dissolution. Now, what's unique about a dissolution is that the creditors are not involved in it. In the case law, it's replete in our brief, there's no due process of law for creditors in a divorce.
So what was the pre-existing encumbrance that should take priority over the judgment in favor of Traeger?
There isn't one. See, that's what the state Supreme Court decided.
There's no encumbrance. How do you even get in line?
What the state Supreme Court decided, I'm not sure I understand the question, was that the property award to Mr. Traeger was given an equitable lien against the property. And when the property was sold, so that would come first. So that property would have to be segregated out. The property award had a lien priority. But what was never addressed until we went back to the trial court was what does Mr. Traeger get? Because whatever he's awarded from Ms. Owen's separate property is subject to the claims of her separate creditors, including Bank of America. And that's what the trial court did the second time around.
And those claims have to have some basis of priority.
They just have
over
to...
the award to him.
And the priority they have is that they exist at the time the award was made. They do not have to be secured, and they do not have to be liquidated. They simply have to exist at the time the divorce court awards property of one spouse to another. That court cannot affect the rights of the creditors of the spouse whose property has been awarded to the other. So the property follows, the claims against that property follow the property to the other spouse. That's what happened. And that's what the case law says. If you look at the key case here, Waters versus Dowd, that was a case that was a guarantee case like ours, contract creditor case. And property was awarded to the wife. She was not personally liable on the guarantee. She had no, just like Mr. Traeger is not liable on Ms. Owen's guarantee. But the property she was awarded was.
Okay. She didn't give the bank a security interest in that property. The court alienated a portion of that property prior to the summary judgment the bank's relying on. Where did the bank's interest attach to the property or proceeds that should establish the right to take it back from Mr. Traeger?
It follows it. It was there when it was
never
awarded.
Attached.
Well, that's because you're confusing the fact that you need to have a lien on it. You don't. Creditors have, in the Farrow versus Ostro case, the tort case, that was an unliquidated claim, not even brought to judgment. And yet that creditor was able to go after the property against that was awarded in the divorce to the non-liable spouse. This is no different than that. It doesn't have to attach. It simply exists because the divorce court cannot give Ms. Owen's property, which is subject to those equitable claims, to Mr. Traeger and cleanse that property from those claims. They follow it because equity gets what's left over. The rights of creditors can't be affected. That's really what this is about. This is not redoing what the Supreme Court did. Judge Canova was very specific in his order where he laid out the judgments Traeger had were paid out of Ms. Owen's share. He divided the property between Ms. Owen's share and Mr. Traeger's share. All of her share was depleted by all the judgments of Mr. Traeger and the bank. And the rest of it, the part that was Mr. Traeger's share, was subject to that existing claim of Bank of America and any other separate creditor she has, because he cannot get more than she had. And that's what the judge ruled. That's what the case is about. Now, if you look at the other issues that are raised by appellant, the in rem claim was expressly preserved by the trial court in the original lien priority ruling. Bank of America was the prevailing party at the trial court level. It had no reason to cross-appeal anything. If Mr. Traeger felt that the preservation of that in rem claim was subject to an appellate argument. He should have raised it. He chose not to. It was there. It was never raised. It was never brought before this court because it had never been decided by the trial court. It really was rendered moot by the initial lien priority ruling, because if you find that the bank's lien is hatched first, then you don't really need to look to what the nature of the in rem or what the nature of the award to Mr. Trigger was, because the bank's claim is paid and you don't need to worry about it. But when you rule, when the Supreme Court ruled that the settlement or the supplemental decree created a lien ahead of the bank's lien on that property, then you have to look at what did Mr. Trigger actually get. That's what Judge Canova did. And he found that what he got was subject to the claims of Mr. Owen's existing creditors that existed at the time the award was made. And again, that claim does not have to be secured on any particular property. It does not have to be liquidated. That's what Farrell and Waters hold. It's simply, it's not about the, you have to simply follow the property, because the property awarded to the spouse is subject to those existing claims. And that's because the creditors are not involved in the divorce. If this had been a partnership, a wind-up, then the property would have been sold, and all the creditors, whether or not they're secured or not, are paid. Same thing in a probate. Mr. Trigger is analogous to an heir. An heir does not get to take property of the estate prior to the creditor's claims being paid, whether or not those claims are liquidated or whether or not they're secured by the property of the probate estate. It's the same thing in a divorce. It's just that the creditors are not involved in that proceeding, and that's why we have cases like Waters and Farrell, to justify, to allow the creditors' rights to be asserted, because the due process rights they do not get in a divorce because they're not a party. So that's what this is about. Now, the fact that the they've made arguments about how this is the law of the case and Judge Canova ignored all of that, that's simply not true. The in rem claim had not been litigated until it was sent back on remand, and Judge Canova specifically took into account the Supreme Court's ruling on the lien priorities, but then looked at the actual in rem award. And this has been embedded in the law. This is not some new concept. Creditors' rights come ahead of equity. And that's true in probate, that's true in corporate dissolution, that's true in partnership dissolution, and it's true in divorce. If there's any other questions, thank you.
Let's start with the procedure. If trial court judges and respondents can sort of do a King's X over here and say, well, wait, you know, I thought I got ruled on as a matter of law, but I'm going to save this other issue just in case I get reversed, you're going to be seeing a lot more of me. This is not something that you're allowed to do. You can't not raise your substantive reasons that you should have prevailed in an appeal that goes all the way to the Supreme Court when the issue has been set up in the Court of Appeals opinion, and then say, oh, here's another reason I should win. It's really the same reason, but I'm calling it something else. That's not the way the appellate system works, and it's not the way that we get cases decided. That's why we have the law of the case doctrine. So this idea that you can not decide a particular, and by the way, that's particularly true with an issue like this, which the Bank of America prevailed on summary judgment on appeal. This court and the Supreme Court could and should have resolved this in the earlier appeal without regard to whether Judge Canova had, because, of course, on a summary judgment, you consider those matters de novo. But, in fact, it's not true that this was not raised. In fact, it was. The bank lost on it because they did not get a writ of attachment against Trigger's interest in the proceeds, and they did not raise it. I'm not saying they would have had to have filed a cross-appeal, but as a minimum, they should have raised this as a grounds for why they were entitled to this, because they should have also gotten a writ of attachment. Because once they lost on what the consequence of the supplemental decree was in terms of creating a lien, they lost on this issue, unless they were in fact correct on their supposed in rem claim. Now let's talk about, you know, this idea that's...
Is it a separate theory or is it a separate claim?
It's I don't even think it's a separate theory. I think it's a different way of characterizing what the nature of the interest is. And the reason I think that is, since the Griggs v. Averbeck case, it's very clear that you have to have some sort of interest in the property, such as a judgment or something like that, in order to be able to prevail on an issue like this. And I'll just read, this is from page 11 of our brief, but here's what Griggs says. And Griggs was decided before all of the case, after all of the cases that they rely on for this interim theory, except Waters, which I'll discuss in just a second here. And I'm paraphrasing here, but it says, when creditors have not obtained during the existence of the marriage a judgment against, and that would be the same as a writ of attachment, it has the same effect, against one or both of the spouses or against the community, and when a former spouse, after termination of the marriage, prevails on the merits, in this case by proving that she was not liable to the creditor, then property distributed to that former spouse cannot be used to satisfy a judgment against the other spouse. That's this case. That is precisely this case. And Mr. Trigger was not liable to the Bank of America. Not only, I mean, his liability had been discharged in bankruptcy, as had the community's. Now, Waters was decided 2 years after this case, and it's sort of an anachronism because it suggests that there might be some interest, but there was security in that case. The real issue in the case was how much of the community property could you get for a community debt, which we don't have here. And they said, well, you can get the amount of the property up into the amount that was in the property when the dissolution occurred. So they were limiting the rights then. Now, I would argue that it's sort of an anachronism since Griggs. I don't want to have to get this issue decided because you can rule that. But every single one of the cases that they rely upon for this idea that there's some sort of interim claim, all of which predate Griggs, which makes it very clear that you have to have had some sort of security interest, which they did not get in this property. They did not get any security from Owens. They all involve community debts, prior community debts that were being charged against a prior member of the community. I want to say one more thing, and that is about Arneson, which is the case that says that you can't affect the rights of creditors. That's true, but it's also true under these consequences. I think it actually works in our favor here because what creditors also can't do is say, oh, wait, well, the dissolution has nothing to do with what assets we have available. If you have a separate debt and assets are distributed to the other spouse, you can't go chasing those assets. You can't go looking. You couldn't, under their argument, you could come in, you have a separate debt, well, you have to pay that before you can pay a maintenance obligation from your ongoing income. That's just not the way it works. And Mr. Trigger and the community were free of this debt. This court and the Supreme Court decided that his rights in those proceeds were a judgment that was secured in this property before the banks. And that was the end of the story. And coming in and trying to come up with another theory for this is just wrong. This court should reverse. It should make very clear in its opinion that the bank is not entitled to the proceeds that were supposed to go to Mr. Trigger. And that was a sum certain that should have been paid almost 6 years ago now. Unless the court has any further question, I've used up my time. Thank you.